Hey, it's Ryan.
This is Steph.
And you're listening to Bible Banter. Today, we're continuing our conversation on the Lord's Prayer.
Yep, we're peeling back the layers and really rediscovering the beauty behind this prayer. We're focusing on the sections, Our Father in Heaven, hallowed be thy name, and give us this day our daily bread. We're looking at how the two correlate and what it means to be a child of the King.
So grab a drink, sit back, and join in on the conversation. Okay, episode 2. Can you believe it?
Oh my gosh.
We survived episode 1.
Oh, are we sure?
I think so. I think we made it through.
We did.
We did. It wasn't completely awkward.
No, it was actually pretty good.
We did all right.
We did great.
All right, so this is episode 2 of the Lord's Prayer. So I'm not going to really recap episodes from week to week, I don't think. Just if you missed episode 1, go back and listen to it. It was pretty great.
I thought so.
I mean, I'm a little biased, but it was okay. Maybe I won't say great. I won't oversell.
I thought it was a cool conversation. I think that it was a really good start to the rest of this. And I mean, it touches on topics that really excite me. So, I mean, I thought it was fun.
No. Well, thank you. You heard it here, folks. She approves.
I approve of my husband, yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, no, I enjoyed the conversation as well. So I will recap in like a sentence or two.
Yeah. Sure.
So kind of what we talked about last week was, it was kind of an intro to the Lord's Prayer, just kind of looking at this from a fresh perspective because, you know, most of us that follow Jesus are very familiar with the Lord's Prayer. We can quote it in our sleep oftentimes.
At least those of us who grew up in the church.
That's, yeah, you know, exactly. But yeah, for sure.
Anyway.
And so, no, that's a good clarification because some people are less familiar. But a lot of us are very familiar with it, and it's kind of lost its
luster.
It's lost its luster. It's, you know, and so I want to just examine the Lord's Prayer just with fresh eyes and just hopefully regain. This conversation, I almost want it to be a rescue mission to regain just the beauty and the power that I think is in this prayer. Mm-hmm. And hopefully people began to see that a little bit last week as we just kind of introed this thing and talked about how really this prayer, which can be divided into two parts. The first part is focusing on our relationship with God, kind of vertical. The second part's horizontal, focusing more on our relationships with one another. And this prayer really is a prayer to participate in God's reconciliation work. This storyline we see throughout the entire Bible that ultimately culminates in Jesus. This mission to make right what man made wrong, to fix the sin problem that affects our relationship with God as well as our relationship with one another. And so really this prayer is an invitation for us to participate in that. And when we look at it that way, it's really quite remarkable. So that's kind of what we talked about last week. That was way more than a sentence or two, but it's fine.
It was good. It was concise.
So now people don't need to listen to last week's episode. I basically got the gist of it.
Sure.
Yeah, no, still go listen to last week. I think it'll be worth it if you missed it. Now, where we're going for the next 3 weeks, so today and then the next 2 weeks, is I want to kind of break down the prayer. And the way I ended last week is I said how I want to kind of make correlations between the vertical part of the prayer and the horizontal part of the prayer.
Yes, you left us on a cliffhanger.
I did leave you on a bit of a cliffhanger. So what I said is that there's correlation, at least I see it this way. There's correlation between the first vertical statement, which is Our Father in Heaven, hallowed be your name, and the first horizontal statement, which is give us this day our daily bread. There's a correlation between your kingdom come, forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors, and then your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. So that's kind of, we're going to take turns and just unpack those over the next 3 weeks, starting with the first, which is Our Father in Heaven, hallowed be your name, and give us this day our daily bread. So let's do it.
Bring it on.
All right.
Thank you.
So the first part of the prayer opens up, of course, with the words, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." So what I want to do just real quick is I want to kind of hack that in two pieces.
Lovely. This is hallowed, but yeah.
Maybe I shouldn't use that word in referencing to the Bible. We're going to hack the Bible to pieces.
It's a little violent, but okay.
And then we're going to reassemble it back together.
Great.
Okay. So we're gonna, I want to hack that phrase in two. And great. then we'll mm-hmm. look at it in turn. So our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Just kind of break that down
okay.
a little bit. So our Father in heaven. And I want to point out when we hear the language in heaven, I think often we think of like a place in the sky, you know, just like this place that we go to after we die. You know, it's typically what a lot of people think.
Angels and trumpets.
And yeah, exactly. You know, pearly gates and streets of gold. And yeah, so when we hear like our Father in heaven, we kind of immediately associate that with God is like in heaven, this kind of physical realm, right, with angels and trumpets.
I always imagined clouds all around.
Yeah, exactly. You know, the very, very Hollywood kind of stereotypical image of heaven. That's usually what we think of when we hear the word heaven. That's not really the way the Bible talks about heaven. You know, when it talks about heaven, most of the time, the language of heaven in the Bible is most often associated with God's throne or dwelling. So whether it's talking about a literal physical place with clouds and angels and trumpets, we'll talk about that another day. But most often, the language of heaven is associated with God's throne and dwelling. So I'll give you just some quick examples just to illustrate this. So Psalm chapter 11, verse 4, as well as Psalm 103, verse 19, as well as Revelation chapter 4, it talks about heaven as the Lord's throne, right? It refers to the Lord's throne is in heaven. So it's kind of heaven is God's throne room, you could say. Isaiah chapter 66, verse 1 says that heaven, this is God speaking through the prophet Isaiah. He says, "Heaven is my throne and the earth is my footstool." So it's this idea of, you know, heaven being his throne, you know, and the earth is merely his footstool. It's very poetic language, just depicting God's greatness, his rule, his authority. You know, heaven's his throne. He rests his feet on the earth, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's very poetic kind of language, but yeah. And then the last one, Psalm 115, verse 3. I love this verse. It says, "God is in heaven and does whatever he wants." I just love that. It's like God is God. Uh-huh. He is on his throne and he just does whatever he wants to do.
I do what I want.
Yeah, you can't argue with that. So yeah. I could go on and on, but yeah, often in the Bible, references to heaven, again, we kind of think of this physical place in the clouds, but most often it's just referring to God's throne, his throne or his dwelling place, and really it's setting God apart as king over all creation. You know, it's trying to make a distinction between God's space versus man's space. You know,
sure.
And so even in Genesis chapter 1, I mean, the entire Bible opens up. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. So immediately we see this distinction between God's kind of dwelling place, man's dwelling place, God's space, our space. It's just the language of heaven is referring to God's kingship, right? God is on his throne. He does whatever he wants to do because he's king,
mm-hmm.
right? And so as we talked about last week, God creates man in his image, and really for two reasons. Number one, God creates man in his image because children bear the image of their father, so we are his children. We have a special intimate relationship with him. You know, we are set apart from all the other animals. You know, there's something very unique. I mean, you even see that in the creation of man. You know, God speaks everything else into existence, but man is God gets very involved. You know, with his hands, he creates man. He breathes his life into him.
it's set apart from the rest of creation.
Exactly. There's something immediately on the first page of the Bible, you could tell there's just something very different about humans. And the Bible says that we were created in his image. And so in part, certainly, I think we're created to be his children. And then with that, too, we're created to be his viceroys, his representatives in the earth. And this is why we see God give Adam and Eve authority, dominion, to rule creation. And of course, that comes with responsibility to, you know, not dominion to just abuse and do whatever you want with creation, but their task is to steward creation, to take care of it, and to work and to name the animals. You know, they're almost an active participant in the ongoing creation, which is really, really fascinating.
Yeah.
Right. And so we see all this on, you know, the first page of the Bible, right? This idea of God is in heaven. He does whatever he wants. He's creator of all. He speaks it all into existence. He creates man in his image to bear his image, to continue his taking care of his creation. And so really, like, what's remarkable about this is that, you know, God is king, but we are his children, right? So our dad is the king, yeah. Right? You know, and so
King
I think,
kings.
Yeah, like we are, you know, in a certain sense, we are princes and princesses of our creator.
I know.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding.
Don't let that get to your head. Great, what have I done? but seriously, like we are royalty in a sense,
yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, I think that is really a remarkable thing when you really think about our identity in God, our identity in Christ, you know, and who we are, that we were created in the image of God to be his children, to be stewards of creation, and that our Father is the King, right? We are children of the King. I think that's what Jesus is getting after here, teaching us to pray to our Father who is in heaven. It's not this far off God. You know, we're not praying to our God that's up in the heavens.
Totally inaccessible.
Yeah. It's our dad is the king of the universe.
Yeah.
And like, that's pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
Right. Anything you wanted to add on that? Or good. Okay. So let me get to the second half. So our Father in heaven, Jesus then says, hallowed be your name. Now the word hallowed, that's probably a word you use all the time, huh?
Totally.
It's a very common word. This is an interesting word. It means, hallowed means to make holy, to set apart, or to sanctify. In fact, the word hallowed is used in the Gettysburg Address.
Mm-hmm.
I think I should have written it down, but yeah, Abraham Lincoln in the address, he talks about how the sacrifice of the soldiers at Gettysburg hallowed that ground.
Yeah.
So their sacrifice set that ground apart, made it holy. This was now, you know, the battle at Gettysburg, that field is now hallowed ground, and it's been sanctified. It's been set apart. It's been made holy, right? That's the idea of hallowed or hallowed. So I guess the question then is, how do we make God's name holy? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So this is Jesus' prayer, right? Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. May your name be made holy, to be set apart. It's like, well, how do we go about doing that?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, God is holy by nature. His name is holy. What does it mean for us to hallow his name, to make his name holy and set apart?
Just say it is. I mean, got to be deeper than that.
Right. Yeah. And for years, you know, I kind of assumed this just had to do with worship.
Sure.
Right. You know, that what Jesus is saying is to, you know, worship, you know, like you said, kind of say his name, God, you're holy. Sing songs about how he's holy. Holy is your name. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of songs about God's name being holy. So I kind of, for years, assumed that's just what it was referring to. It was just kind of this call to worship. You know, our Father in heaven, holy is your name. But I think it's a lot deeper than that. And so this is really, really interesting. So in Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, this is one of the Ten Commandments. which I referenced last week. But the Ten Commandment, or one of the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, verse 7, is to do not take the name of God in vain, right? Mm-hmm. Now, we probably, most of us listening, probably associate that with, like, do not use God's name in conjunction with a swear word, mm-hmm. right? You know, I've heard the joke, Jesus, you know, his name is not a swear word, you know. No.
His middle name isn't the F word.
Exactly, right? So, you know, growing up in church, I mean, I have, you know, I grew up in church. Some of my earliest memories are in church. I have an extensive church background. So for my entire church upbringing, that's just what I was taught. That's what mm-hmm. I was told, was that's what this means. Don't take God's name in vain, right? Don't use his name as a swear word. But you could, I mean, I'm not saying that that's not part of it. You know, I'm not.
But it's not exclusively that necessarily.
Yeah, exactly. I think to say that that's what this means is to completely reduce this command down to basically nothing. Mm-hmm. Like, why would God, in the midst of don't make other idols, don't serve other gods, and in the midst of all these other commands, why would God give a command about don't use my name as a swear word? I think it's so much more than that. And to reduce it down to just that is to take its power away.
Sure.
So
there's more wisdom in it than that.
Absolutely. So to this the language in the Hebrew, this idea of do not take the name of God in vain, that word take can be also translated lift up, carry, or bear. Hmm. And so the command literally could say, do not lift up my name in vain, do not carry my name in vain, or do not bear my name in vain. Mm-hmm. And so what does it mean to make God's name holy, to hallow his name? We make his name holy by taking up or carrying his name in a worthy manner. So if you and I are created in God's image to be his children, to be his viceroys, his representatives in the earth, to have his authority to steward and care for creation, to participate in this redemptive work in the earth, we, as his children, we carry his name.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, I carry the name of my father. And so as God's children, we bear and carry his name. And so, you know, as children, as viceroys, as, you know, as stewards of creation, we have a responsibility to not take up or bear or carry God's name in an unworthy manner, right? Does
sure,
that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. So that's the command to don't take the name of the Lord in vain. It's don't bear God's name in an unworthy manner. You know, God said, I you know, he's talking to the Israelites at this point, right? I've chosen you. I've put my name on you. You know, I've stamped you as my chosen people. Don't you dare carry my name in an unworthy manner. Your job is to represent me to the rest of the world. And this goes back to the promise to Abraham. Through you, I'm going to bless all the nations of the earth. Right? What God was doing through Israel wasn't just for Israel's sake. It was for humanity. It was this redemptive plan that culminates in Jesus and that you and I are now invited to participate in.
Right.
Right. Like we talked about last week. So yeah, it's this command. Like, my name is on you. Don't you dare represent it bad.
Right.
Right. That's the command. And so the question of, well, you know, how do we make God's name holy? Well, we make his name holy by carrying his name in a worthy manner. So another way you could translate this prayer or this part of the prayer, "Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name." Just to try to reword it a little bit to make it a little bit more accessible for us. Because that language, especially the word hallowed, is just very, you know, it's very
not kinda, normal language.
No, it's not normal language. It's got a lot of very spiritual, pious overtones to it. So, so just to reword that sentence a little bit, just to make it a little more accessible, I rewrote it: "Our Father who is on his throne, may our lives reflect the holiness of your name we bear as your children." It's a little more wordy, but I think that gets to the essence of at least what I'm trying to communicate.
It articulates it in a more accessible manner.
Yeah, at least I'm hoping so.
Yeah.
I'll read it again. "Our Father who is on his throne, may our lives reflect the holiness of your name we bear as your children." Right.
Yeah.
Now, there's this strange but wonderful tension that we must hold. That God sits on his throne in heaven and his name is holy, but God is our Father and we can boldly call upon his holy name, right? It's this strange tension that I think often, and I've been around Christian circles that will emphasize one extreme versus the other. And so some will kind of put a stronger emphasis on God being king, you know? God is king. He's almighty. He's all powerful. You know, you better not act up. You know, you better take him seriously, right?
It's a scary dad.
Yeah, exactly. He's a scary father that you better be like Adam and Eve. You better go run and hide when he shows up, right? And so some put an emphasis on that aspect, right? That God is on his throne. He does whatever he wants. He's king. You better take him serious. But then some put an emphasis on the other, that God is our Father, you know, that he's merciful and full of compassion and full of love. And, you know, you can never do any wrong. You know, he spoils you, right? He'll never discipline you, right? That kind of extreme.
Man, yeah.
And I think there really is this interesting tension that it's, if we're to be honest, I think it can be hard to really grab hold of, but both are true.
Yeah,
that God is king of the universe that created all. He is holy, but at the same time, we are his children, and we can boldly call upon his name. You know,
absolutely. And I mean, it makes perfect sense when you think of a human parent. I mean, especially to a small child, they have all of the monetary power, all of the decision power. You know, they are completely responsible for you. They can choose, you know, as a child, they can choose everything for you. So they have that power and to discipline, you know, but then they also love you and buy you toys and, you know, cook you good food. And I mean, I feel like it's a multiple, you know, there's multiple sides to God. And I think that, I mean, it makes sense as a human parent that all those things can still exist, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think God, in all of our human relationships, God has a little bit of himself in those.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we can see different aspects of his character, you know, and I think, you know, in our earthly parents, you know, our relationship with them, you know, with a spouse, you know, with...
True.
When you have your own children, you know, with even your relationship with your boss at work. I mean, every relationship, I think if we have eyes to see, you know, for sure, I think we can see just aspects of God's nature and even those tensions, like you said, you know, with our relationship with our parents. If you had a good relationship with your mom or dad, you definitely, there's that tension
mm-hmm.
there of both aspects being true.
Right. No, I think you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. So Hebrews, just to kind of emphasize this, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 16 says, "Let us then with confidence draw near to the throne of grace that we may receive mercy and find grace to help in time of need." I think that just summarizes this point really, really well.
Yeah.
That God is on his throne. He does whatever he wants. He created all things, but with confidence we can come to his throne and yeah. call upon his name.
What a privilege.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, obviously we don't live, or at least in the United States, we don't live in a, you know, monarch society. Even in like, if anybody's listening from like the UK, I mean, you have a monarch, but they don't hold much power. They're just kind of for show. All of our UK listeners just turned off. That's fine. But the point is like, I think we definitely don't understand a king type, you know, society or relationship. Mm-hmm. But like, if you just watch Game of Thrones,
sure,
you know, that maybe that can help, you know, but it's like, you know, the
Are
only
we endorsing that?
Maybe not. I'm not endorsing Game of Thrones, especially after the last season.
Yes.
Don't even bother. And it's also exactly. not very wholesome. Officially unendorsed.
Yes. But as an example,
hypothetically, as an example, if you watch Game of Thrones, I mean, that's a terrible example because most of the like kings in that show were ruthless and
that's true.
Not kind like our father. But, you know, you wouldn't dare step boldly into the throne room unless you're a child of the king. And even then, a lot of kings, you still don't do that. You yeah. know, it's, you know, there's, that's just very inappropriate. But that's like the word you use, that's the privilege that we have, that we can boldly with the Bible says with confidence,
yeah.
just stroll right in
yeah.
to the throne. A little bit of a tangent, but years ago when I was in Bible school, every morning we opened up with chapel. So it was about 30 minutes of worship, and then we would disperse to our classes for the day. And there was one particular morning, Zach Neese, who at the time was the leader of like the school of worship, the kind of the worship division of the school I went to. Zach Neese was leading worship one morning, and he's up there. I mean, there's 2,000 plus students, you know, we're all there, all the faculty, you know, we're all assembled that morning. And he's up there on his guitar. He's leading worship in front of everybody. And right in the middle, his little son, you know, I mean, probably no more than 5 years old, just comes strutting up the steps and just puts his arms around his daddy's leg and just halfway through, just the second half of the worship, just stood up there on the stage next to his dad. And I just started thinking, like, that kid's the only one in this room that can get away with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if, first of all, if anyone else did that, it would just be really weird.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, a faculty member would come up and kind of shoo him off. Like, that kid's the only one that has the privilege to do that. The kid didn't care. He had confidence. He was like, I don't care if you guys think I'm weird. This is my dad and I want to go hang out with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, in that moment, it was one of the most beautiful portrayals of worship. Mm-hmm. You know, and ironically, you know, Zach Neese is standing up there trying to lead worship through music. And unbeknownst to him, like, there was a greater worship happening, if that makes, I don't know how to word it, but there was a greater worship that was being modeled in that moment. It had nothing to do with the music,
yeah.
but just this picture of we with confidence can come boldly to our Father at his throne. Like, we have that privilege
yeah.
as children of the King, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
that is really cool. Okay, so we've got our awesome God with a hallowed name. We've got being able to just enter his throne room confidently. But what on earth does that have to do with bread? Please tell me.
Yeah, so my claim is that the expression, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, is correlated, at least in some way, to give us this day our daily bread.
You're going to have to spell that out for me.
Yeah, I'll try, and hopefully people, namely you, see the correlation the same way I do. So it's the burden's on me to explain myself, but I'll do the best I can. So this phrase, give us this day our daily bread. Okay, this is extremely fascinating. Okay, so the word daily in the Greek. So for those of you that are newer to the Bible, the Old Testament was written primarily in Hebrew, the New Testament primarily in Greek. Well, the Old Testament was written in Hebrew, the New Testament primarily in Greek, mm-hmm. Some Aramaic, and you know. So the word for daily in the original Greek language of the Bible is the Greek word, and I'm going to try to pronounce this correctly, epiousios. Epiousios. I'm probably butchering that, but that's close.
We wouldn't know.
That's true. I gotta say it with confidence.
Yes.
No one will know unless someone out there can actually speak Greek. But
epiousios, yeah, definitely.
Epiousios, oh, yeah. Yeah, of course. That's epiousios. Okay. This is what's super fascinating. This word does not appear anywhere else in any ancient Greek literature.
What?
This word, this is the only existence of this word to be found ever. Doesn't exist. It doesn't exist anywhere else in the New Testament. It doesn't exist in any other Greek literature. Anywhere has it been found. This is the only time this word ever appears.
They're making stuff up.
Exactly. I mean, it seems to be a made-up word. It really does seem to be a made-up word. And there's been, because of this, there's been a lot of debate throughout church history about exactly what this word means. Because, again, it seems to be a made-up word. It doesn't appear anywhere else. Like I said, it's not anywhere else in the New Testament or any outside Greek literature. Right? I mean, it seems to be a made-up word. Essentially, it is. And so there's been a lot of debate about exactly what this word means and,
sure.
and how to translate the word.
Yeah.
So I won't go through all of them because there's a lot of different opinions and they're confusing and there's a lot of conflicts. And especially when you're dealing with, ancient languages like Hebrew and Greek, it's a lot to take in. I don't fully understand it, but I want to talk about two. All right. So kind of the two most common interpretations of this word and kind of what they mean. So the first one is definitely the most common interpretation, which is daily. That's what's been translated in most of our English Bibles. And the ESV, which is the version I'm using, we read the prayer. That's the word that's being used, right? Give us this day our daily bread, epiousios. It's been translated most commonly as daily. The reason for that, and I'm going to try my best to explain this in a way that makes sense. Bear with me. Ask me questions if you need clarification, because I barely understand myself. So I'm not a linguist. Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Someone who studies language and stuff. I don't know. So, but the reason that they come to this conclusion is so that the there's a word in Greek, epi, which can be translated for. And then there's a Greek word, ousia, which can be translated being, for being. And so that's why they've come to, some interpreters have come to the conclusion, they kind of imply the day. So, for the day being. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, epi means for, ousia means being. So, epiousia means for the day being. So, they translate epiousios, which is, kind of a variation of that. They're like, well, maybe it means for the day being. So, daily, right?
Yeah.
Bread for the day being. Does that make sense?
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Also, there's a Greek word, epiousa, which means the next or following. So it could be, give us this bread for the following day. So instead of give us this day our daily bread, it could be translated, give us this day our bread for the next day, right?
Sure.
So that's another interpretation, because again, the Greek word epiousa is sort of similar to epiousios. You know, again, they're trying, because this word seems to be a made up word that doesn't exist anywhere else. They're trying their best based on other Greek words to kind of glean its meaning.
Right.
Right. And so there's a lot more. If you're interested, I mean, just Google, you can, I mean, there's a lot of information. Like I said, it's a lot to take in. This is really a very dumbed down oversimplification of this, what's going on here. But does that make sense?
Yeah. So okay. Far.
Okay. So that's the most common interpretation. That's why in a lot of our Bibles, it is translated daily bread. So give us this day our daily bread, or it could be translated, give us this day our bread for tomorrow. Obviously this kind of gives us this idea of, you know, like the children in Israel, who, when they were in the wilderness, God gave them manna from heaven, right? Mm-hmm. Every morning they would wake up and it was this weird flaky, dewy stuff that would show up. The word manna literally means, what is it? Right, that's the word in Hebrew. It was, what is this? We don't know. That's just what we'll call it, right? But God supernaturally just fed them every single day in the wilderness. He sustained them with the bread they needed for that day.
Yeah.
And they were instructed, don't take extra because it will spoil. Unless it's Friday, then take enough for Sabbath. And, you know, because you're not supposed to work or gather food on the Sabbath, right? But they were instructed, just trust me. Right. Every day I'm going to provide what you need for that day. And then on Friday, I'll provide you what you need for the following day. But it was this trust relationship that God invited them into. Mm-hmm. Right. I'm going to provide you every day what you need for that day. I want to show you a couple of verses here in Matthew chapter 6. So this is the Sermon on the Mount, which is where we find the Lord's Prayer that we're looking at. But Jesus says this in Matthew chapter 6, verse 31 through 34. He says, therefore, do not be anxious, saying, what shall we eat? Or what shall we drink? Or what shall we wear? For the Gentiles seek after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them all. But seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added to you. Therefore, do not be anxious about tomorrow, for tomorrow will be anxious for itself. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. There's a lot that we could unpack there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot Jesus is saying. Mm-hmm. But I think it's interesting, you know, Jesus, it's the same kind of idea, right? That we shouldn't be anxious about what we need for tomorrow. We shouldn't be anxious about what we're going to eat, what we're going to wear, what we're going to drink. And I specifically love how Jesus points out, for the Gentiles seek after these things, but your heavenly Father knows that you need them. Right? Now, the word Gentiles, you'll find that all throughout the New Testament. It was a way of distinguishing, you know, the Hebrew people and then everyone else. You know, Gentiles basically was everybody outside of the covenant of Israel.
Muggles.
Basically, the Muggles, right? So there was God's chosen people and then the Muggles. So Jesus is basically like, don't be like the Muggles, right? They are constantly anxious and worried about what they're going to eat, what they're going to wear. They're constantly worried about tomorrow and what tomorrow will bring. But Jesus is like, just trust my heavenly Father, because he knows what you need. So to hopefully tie it into this idea of our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, right? This is why I think these two phrases correlate, because when we truly understand that our Father is King of the universe, that, like the Bible says, he owns cattle on 1,000 hills, right? He heaven is his throne and the earth is merely his footstool. He sits on his throne and does whatever he wants, right? When we really begin to understand who God is, that he is King, that he owns it all, and that we are his children, we can begin to trust him for our daily bread.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. You know, we can begin to not be like the Gentiles who are constantly anxious and worried about, how am I going to pay my bills? How am I going to feed my family? You know, we can just have this radical trust. which is easier said than done.
Absolutely.
You know, but we can have this radical trust that our Father who is in heaven, whose name is holy, but we can boldly with confidence come into his throne. He's going to give us everything we need. He'll provide for us our daily bread.
Yeah.
Because our dad is the king.
Yeah. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. No, that took way too long, but that clicked. And no, I mean, that is really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really amazing. I think it's when you really begin to, man, I really want to do a series, and we'll get to it. I mean, there's a lot of topics I want to cover in this podcast, but yes. I really want to do one eventually on identity. Because I think if we really understood, first of all, who God is, the way I like to say it is that our God view will shape our worldview, right? How we view God, how we understand God is going to shape how we view everything else.
I can see it, absolutely.
So it's like if we really understood who God is, again, that he's king, he's on his throne, but then if we also truly understood who we were, you know, who we are, that were his children.
Yeah.
I think it would radically change everything.
Yeah.
You know, I think it would change the way we live. It would make the Christian faith something that we're a lot more serious about.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people treat, you know, their faith as a kind of a hobby, something they do on the side. It's just a part of who they are. But I think if we really begin to understand this stuff, like, I think it would make it a lot more real and a lot more serious.
Yeah, it changes things, and it's such a gift too. You know, I think a lot of people also view themselves only as the servant of God.
Yeah,
and a king's servants. I mean, that's an awesome job, but that still is such a different place in life as the child of the king.
Oh yeah,
the king of kings. You Absolutely. Know, and that's still, there's also servitude in that, but you know, mm-hmm. what an honor. And it changes who you are and what you are capable of, you know, and what you mean to God when you are his child and not just his servant.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, kind of goes back to what I was saying earlier about the tension that we must hold and how we mm-hmm. tend to go from one extreme or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we either overemphasize that God's king or we overemphasize that he's father. And in the same way, we can overemphasize that we're servants of God, but we can overemphasize that we're his children and become spoiled brats.
Uh-huh.
Right. But yeah, I think
balance is hard.
It is really hard.
Balance is very hard.
It is really hard. And I'm learning the older I get and the more I study the Bible and the more I follow Jesus, I'm learning how much balance is required in this faith. I think we like to go to extremes. Mm-hmm. We like to be polarized.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just look at the political landscape today. We won't get into that, but it's like we like to pick sides. We like to go to extremes. We like absolutes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
in a way, it's less complicated.
It is. Know? Yeah. You know, it's, you know, if we can make a clear stance and this is exactly what this means and, you know, it's a lot less complicated. It makes us feel better. It makes us feel more grounded in a way, I guess.
Yeah. But like many things, serving God is not binary.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. So like you said, balance is really difficult, but I think there's a lot of balance required.
Yeah.
Following Jesus isn't easy. It's a lifetime of a lot of work.
Challenge. And
yeah. And, you know, but I think if we begin to grapple with this tension, this balance that God is king, but we are his children. I think it just would radically reshape a lot of things. I think it would change. It certainly would. I mean, if I really begin to believe that, you know, that God is king and that I'm his child and I can boldly come to his throne, like, I mean, I would take things more seriously. I would, you know.
You can treat others different too, because, you know, they're also a child of the king. And that person's a child of the king.
Yeah.
You're a child, yeah.
That's a really good point. Yeah.
So we carry ourselves differently. We serve him differently. We operate in the world differently, you know, as the child of someone who has dominion over all. But remember, it might help us remember that so is everyone else, you know, so are our brothers and sisters. We're all equal in that sense, just as precious.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point. Yeah. Yeah, seeing other people as the image bearers of God.
Yeah.
As children of God. Even people that don't follow Jesus, you know, even people outside of the Christian faith, they were still made in God's image.
Yeah.
You know, and so to vilify, you know, us versus them is not what God's called us to do. Yeah. But to begin to see everybody as made in God's image, deserving of love and respect. And yeah, it changes everything.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. I'll tell you the truth.
So, I told you that I was going to give you kind of the two main interpretations for this Greek word. What was it again? Epiousios.
Yeah.
Epiousios. This made up word. Matthew just totally making up words.
Epinephrine.
No. Epiousios.
Epinephrine.
Okay. Epinephrine. Whatever you want to. It's a made up word, so you can call it whatever you want. All right. So the most common interpretation that we just talked about daily. The second, another interesting interpretation, is super substance.
What?
Yeah. Now, this has a lot of popularity in Catholic circles.
Okay.
But yeah, it's an interesting interpretation, which means super substance. So this is how they come to this. So the Greek word epi, which can be translated for, that's what we talked about previously. Uh-huh. It can also be translated over or above.
Huh.
You know, so it's the way the Greek language works, Hebrew is this way too. There could be a word that just depending upon the context, it could be translated different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why English translators, they try to help us it's a lot of work to translate the Bible into a language is extremely difficult. Mad props to people who do it because they've got to take these words and just based on the context, they have to try to
find some English word that may or may not reflect that word.
Exactly. So. Yeah. And sometimes there's not really a word. And so they do the best they can. Sometimes that's why you'll see with translation, sometimes one translation uses a very different word from another, just because sometimes it's just up to the judgment of the translator, because they're translating from a very different language. And so anyway, this word epi, this Greek word, in some contexts it can be translated for, in other contexts it can be translated over or above. The Greek word ousia. Yeah, so that word, previously I said, you know, it can be translated being. So the argument for the translation daily is epi is for, ousia is being. So they just kind of imply for the day being.
Sure.
But the word ousia can also be translated substance or essence. So for the day being, the word being is like, you know, kind of a, how would you say that? Like a time frame.
Present.
Yeah. Present. Yeah. That's a good way to like
existence.
Being meaning present or existence. So that's why, they translate that word, you know, for the being, for the day being. It's this idea of kind of the present moment. But this word, ousia can also, being can also mean like substance, like human being, substance or essence.
Huh.
Hopefully that made sense, but basically epi over or above and ousia being or substance or essence. So over and above substance and essence. So it's a little clunky, but some argue that like you could translate this word like super substance or a substance or an essence that's over and above.
Yeah.
Right. Does that make sense? Yeah. Now, one of the arguments against the daily interpretation. So again, that's the most common interpretation. And in most of our Bibles, daily bread is translated that way. One of the arguments against the daily interpretation is that there is a Greek, there is a word in the Greek for day, which is the Greek word hemera. That's the Greek word for day. But there's also a Greek word already for daily, which is kathemerinos. Kathemerinos. Something like that. And that word, you actually, that word shows up a couple times in the New Testament, and it's translated daily. So there's already a, so why would Matthew, like if he intended daily bread, why would he not use the Greek word kathemerinos?
There's a perfectly good word already. Why yeah. do something different?
Exactly. It's not like to get that point across, he didn't have to make up a word because, a word already existed in the Greek language.
Sure.
Right. So that's one of the arguments against that this word can't mean daily because there was already a word that meant daily. So it's got to mean something else. And so again, there's multiple interpretations of this word. Like I said, theologians have been arguing this from the very beginning. But one of the, just an interesting interpretation is super substance or a substance that's over and above.
Sure.
Now to try to explain what they mean by that, I want to read. So this is from John chapter 6, verse 30 through 35. It says, so they said to him, they said to Jesus, so they come to Jesus and they ask, then what sign do you do that we may see and believe you? What work do you perform? So kind of like last week, you know, we saw an example of the Pharisees coming to Jesus to test them, to trick them. This is the same kind of thing. What sign do you do that we want to see and believe? What work will you do? What work will you perform? And they go on to say, our fathers ate the manna in the wilderness. As it is written, he gave them bread from heaven to eat. Right? So they're saying, right? I mean, give us a sign, right? Perform us a miracle so that we may believe in you. Again, they didn't really want to believe in them. They're just trying to trap them. Mm-hmm. And they say, for example, like our fathers in the wilderness, God fed them the supernatural manna bread stuff. You know, just an example, you know, you could do something like that. It's very similar to Jesus' temptation in the wilderness. It's interesting. The serpent or the devil, you know, says to Jesus, just turn this stone into bread, mm-hmm. right? Just perform a little miracle. You're hungry. Just turn the stone into bread, right? Yeah.
It's just going to be done.
Yeah. It's interesting. So they're giving them kind of the same temptation, right? Just, you know, or hey, just perform a little miracle, prove that you are the Son of God. That's what the devil said to Jesus, right? If you really are the Son of God, turn the stone into bread.
Yeah.
Right. And here they're saying, well, you know, just prove. Give us a sign, prove that you are who you say you are. For example, you know, in the wilderness, our fathers, they ate manna. God gave them bread from heaven to eat. Jesus says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, it was not Moses who gave you the bread from heaven, but my Father gives you the true bread from heaven. For the bread of God is he who comes down from heaven and gives life to the world. They said to him, sir, give us this bread always. They're like, well, that sounds pretty cool. Like that bread is even better than manna. Sure, give it to us. And Jesus says to them, I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me shall not hunger, and whoever believes in me shall never thirst. Right. So Jesus, I mean, you know, Jesus is like, look, I am the bread of life. Right. That's his point, is that I am the bread that the Father is sending to give life to all. So this is this interpretation of super substance is referencing Jesus. Mm-hmm. What Jesus is teaching us to pray when he says, give, you know, our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name, give us this day our daily bread. It's asking for Jesus,
yeah.
you know, like a daily dose of Jesus in a way.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's why, you know, they come to this, you know, this super substance, this substance that's over and above. It's more sustainable than physical bread. It's more life-giving. It's Jesus, right?
Yeah.
He is the one that sustains all life, right? He's the one. He is the true bread come down from heaven, and whoever eats him shall never hunger and shall never thirst.
Man.
Yeah. It's wild, isn't it?
That is really interesting.
Yeah. So, you know, one might ask, well, which is it? You know, is it, should we continue translating this? Give us this day our daily bread. Should we translate it super substance bread? Give us this day our Jesus bread, you know? Like, and I think both, we can hold both interpretations as true.
Sure.
You know, for sure. Cause I think, you know, that our Father in heaven will provide both our supernatural needs as well as our natural needs.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think if we truly believe that our dad is king, you know, we can trust him that he is going to provide what we need for our body, but we can also trust that he's going to provide what we need for our spirits as well.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, whatever interpretation is more accurate, you know, maybe both, maybe it doesn't really matter. You know, I think we can trust that God will provide all that we need physically, but it's also true that we can trust that God is going to provide all that we need spiritually, mm-hmm. that Jesus is truly all that we need.
Yeah.
You know, and I think this is the radical nature of the gospel, right? That we don't need, you know, we don't need to work for our salvation. We don't need to earn it. We don't need to seek God's approval, right? Our dad is the king and he loves us. And he's going to provide all that we need, you know, spiritually. You know, he's going to sustain us, right? We don't need to work it off. It's interesting. You mentioned earlier, you talked about kind of the difference between being a servant of God or being his child. Years ago, I got really convicted one day. In fact, I remember at the time I worked at Walmart. I lived in Amarillo and I worked at Walmart. And
Amarillo, Texas.
Yes, Amarillo, Texas, up in the panhandle. And I was, to make a long story short, I was really jaded at the time. I was kind of fresh off of Bible school. I had just gone through a breakup, and part of moving to Amarillo was just to escape, for it to be honest. And so I was just kind of like, I was kind of frustrated with church and religion, just life in general, and just a long story, but I remember there was one day I was walking into work at Walmart. So I remember I was still outside and I was walking in to start my shift, and I felt it was as if God said to me, "You are not my indentured servant. You are my child." And for those of you who aren't familiar, an indentured servant was someone who, if they had a debt to pay and they couldn't pay it, they basically worked out a deal where they became that person, whoever they owed the debt to, they became that person's servant for an agreed a period of time. And after that period was over, they were free to go. I don't know, it was just this moment of conviction where I realized that for much of my life, I had been almost operating as an indentured servant, where God forgave me of my debt, right? This huge debt. We're going to talk about this next week, actually. This huge debt that I had been forgiven of. You know, God forgave me of my sins, and now I'm his servant, and I need to work off that debt. You know, I've got to work really hard. I got to be a good Christian, and you know, I got to pay off this debt. And once I'm dead, then I'll be free to enjoy eternal life in heaven, right? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of Christians kind of operate that way, like indentured servants,
yeah.
Right? We owe God now.
Yeah.
You know, he paid this debt. We owe him our lives. We gotta serve him really good, or he's gonna take it away from us.
Right.
And yeah, it was just this moment of like, hey, I'm your father. I love you. You're not my indentured servant. You know, you're my child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The spirit of it is the spirit of the work isn't forced labor.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's all a labor of love.
Exactly, for sure.
As you would in an ideal loving family.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that was something that God just challenged me on, and I realized that I had just had almost this servitude mindset where, you know, not really out of joy or love, but almost like I owed God something.
You had no choice.
Yeah. And it was really freeing to realize, you know, my identity, that I'm a child of the King, and yes, he is King and he is holy and he is to be taken seriously, but I can with confidence and boldness come to his throne in time of need, you know, and that he's going to provide all that I need, not just physically, but spiritually as well.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't just save us, he sustains us.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's a huge thing for us to really believe. I think it can change our entire lives. Okay, so next week we're going to continue the conversation on the Lord's Prayer we're going to look at the next two phrases, which is "Your kingdom come and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors." So very much looking forward to that.
I have to think about what that connection is.
Oh, yes.
Can't wait.
You mull over it.
Uh-huh.
It'll be good. I'm excited.
Awesome. Thanks for joining the conversation today. If you're watching on YouTube, we'd love it if you could like and subscribe. And feel free to jump in the comments section to continue the conversation later. If you're listening on an audio platform, we'd love it if you could leave a review, tell us more of what you thought about today, and make sure to subscribe so you can keep track of future episodes.
For more information, for additional episodes and content, as well as info on how you can support the show, visit our website at BibleBanterPodcast.com. We'll see you next week.